This episode takes us into the toughest conversation we've ever had on this podcast. Our goal was to spark meaningful dialogue about the weight of traumatic loss while honoring the depth of pain without sensationalizing it. We're incredibly grateful to Brendan Shaw for bravely sharing his story about losing his brother.
This conversation also highlights the injustices mourning families face in the court system today. As you listen, we ask you to approach this conversation with the same care and respect we brought to it. Welcome, Brendan, to our season two of Two Girls with Grief podcast. We're so happy to have you here. Can you please introduce yourself to our podcast listeners?
So happy to be here as well. Thank you so much for asking me to come on. My name is Brendan. If anybody has seen any of my stuff on TikTok, it's by Brendan Shaw or Brendan Shaw Grief. Maybe that's what looks familiar to you. And I guess the reason I'm here is because I experienced a very traumatic and tragic loss of my brother in April 2022, and it completely changed how I see everything. So since that happened, I started realizing how isolating grief can be, and very recently, I started creating content around this topic. Mostly, my initial goal was to just kind of get some of these thoughts that I have out of my head, but very quickly, it kind of turned into almost providing some comfort or validation for a lot of people who are in a similar boat. And grief is super hard, super messy. It sucks. But I've found that talking about it or connecting with others about it can be really powerful. And thank you again so much for having me on here to do that.
I saw your TikToks and I just saw that you lost your brother and I didn't know the reason or the cause behind it, but I lost a sibling. I lost my sister. And I think one of the first videos I saw was just like a slideshow of photos of you and your brother like growing up, and yeah. It just that like really hit me because I always look at like old photos of me and my sister, and without fail, like to this day, it's been 8 years going on nine, I cry every time I look at photos. And yeah. So I was drawn to your story and then jumped on one of your lives to like hear more about your story, and then I was like, oh my gosh, it's way more than I thought it was. Like I didn't realize there's more to the story than I assumed. I don't know. You don't assume, I guess, traumatic loss. Grief is sad enough.
Right. No, I get that. I don't blame you. I don't know why you would assume it. It's not really, I guess, normal, not a normal situation. But I'm glad you popped in the live. And I get what you're saying about the photos. That one post that you're referencing was almost more of like a therapy exercise for me to let myself go and like curate a few photos. That was very, very difficult to do. Like I said, I started doing this more for myself. I figured one or two people in the world would see any of these posts. It was more of an exercise for myself. So yeah, but I can obviously understand as a sibling kind of relating to that and maybe having a bit of a reaction.
Yeah, it's something Rachel and I talk about. I did not lose a sibling, but I did lose a parent. And that's where Rachel and I connect a lot on is losing people in the medical sense and a illness perspective. So having you on and talking about different type of grief and how that affects people, because Rachel and I can only speak to what it's like to lose people in that kind of like medical landscape or that illness perspective. But we want to know a little bit more about your brother and what he is like and what kind of relationship you had with him. Just, I want to like, let's bring your brother like really alive for our listeners and to feel connected.
So my brother's name is Philip. He's 2 years younger than me. When this happened in 2022, he was 35, I was 37. He was a physician's assistant. He was a surgical physician's assistant and a very good one at that. And his entire hospital, absolutely adored him. Every single person in that place loved him. I couldn't have heard more stories that lent to that. After this, I got to meet all these people and they were like, you know, we're not just saying this. Your brother was my favorite person that I saw. If I saw him during the day, it made my day. He was that kind of person. And it makes sense. He developed like a ridiculous personality. I don't know if it's being a second child. I don't know what it is, but he was always trying to make whoever he was talking to laugh. He would figure out what it was and he would kind of chameleon himself and he would make you laugh. He would find that thing. And every single time he'd see you, he'd remember it and he would make you laugh. He had like a boyishness to him. Like you're kind of like a little boy. but you're also like this amazing, accomplished, smart, witty man. You know, like he just had this way about him. And everybody felt that. Everybody felt that about him. There isn't a person on earth who didn't love Philip. If you knew him, you loved him. Like it was as simple as that.
I feel that so much. My sister was 2 years older than me. So I was like the younger sister. Mm-hmm. And I feel like our roles were kind of reversed. Like she had so many friends. We had a celebration of life and it was like jam packed with people that flew all over the country. Some people out of the country, like so many people showed up for her. And she just like had so many special friendships. And there were so many nice stories about her that was like the only thing that made me feel any better about anything was just like she was so loved and just reaffirming that she was just like a really good person and people loved her. And I started thinking like, wow, I need to step up my game because so many people love her. And I'm like, I don't think I have this many friends. I don't think I put in as much effort as she does with this like huge room full of people that have these special stories with her. And so I totally relate to that where I'm like, you learn so much from your siblings. And as like the younger sibling, I was like, obsessed with my sister and looked up to her. And I think 2 years is like so close in age that you really do grow up together. It's like, I don't know life. Now I do, but I didn't know life without her as a younger sister. So I even hearing like the 2 years apart, I feel like that hurts my heart even more because I just know how like close that relationship is.
I mean, siblings are so unique in that obviously our parents, we don't know life without our parents either, right? They're like our foundation. But if you're close enough with a sibling, it's not only the same, but there's like that twist where you're the same age, basically. You're going through the same stages. You have those same friend groups and schools, and you're just doing all the stuff you do when you grow up, and you're doing it together. Your parents are always your parents, and you're like, you're old. And I look back and I'm like, I'm sorry I ever thought you were old. You're not old. I'm old now. But yeah, it's just that uniqueness. And it's, I never saw him as like, you know, my baby brother. It was like, we're my friends are your friends. Our names were synonymous. It didn't matter if his friends were talking about us or my friends. It was Brendan and Philip. It was Brendan and Philip. Are Brendan and Philip coming? You know, that's how I grew up. And it's, just like anyone who loses anyone, it's very difficult to describe those nuances, but that's kind of where I always go with it, what I just said, because I just want people to understand, like, we were the same. We were a pair, you know?
I don't think people talk enough about sibling loss and just, I mean, I think I don't like comparing any grief because I feel like that just ends up with people not agreeing on anything. But I think sibling loss is very unique. Like Kendall hasn't lost any siblings, but she's really close to her siblings and she sees them all the time. And like, that sibling bond is so unique. And it really is. You expect to live your life with them. You expect to do all these things. And when they're gone, it really rips your whole life apart, honestly.
Yeah. No, that's the little twist, right? Like, you know, and when I lose my parents, I don't even know what I'm going to do. Right. Like I love my parents to death. I love my family. I have an amazing, large family, huge support group. I can't imagine losing any one of them. But in the back of your mind, it's almost like, well, you know, my grandparents will pass. And then when I get older, it's like siblings don't ever enter that equation, especially when you're close. It's like, well, I'm going to live forever. So they're going to live forever. You know, like you don't think about death for yourself. And maybe, you know, until you actually experience something like what we're going through, when you lose someone super, super close. And it becomes like the forefront of your mind. But when that happens, and especially out of the blue, you know, there's obviously tons of ways that somebody can go. If you had to watch a sibling, you know, get cancer and you watch them decline over years, like that's horrible. That's terrible. So there's no, again, like you just said, comparing is pointless because each one of these things has nuance. But regardless, when it's a sibling, that you never think that, you never see that coming. It's not in your mind. Like when I'm X age, I'm going to lose all my grandparents, my parents. So I think that just adds like a little extra layer of like complexity in how you have to think about it or what it does in terms of like trying to heal. I use heal in quotes. Yeah.
It never crossed my mind that my sister's going to pass away, even when she got sick. So when it happened, I was just like, what the hell? It was just so shocking. So that kind of leads us into our next question. And I want to enter into this delicately because me and Kendall know what it feels like to hear about someone's passing, but I think when it's more of a traumatic loss, finding out that someone has passed away in that way is different because it's like very unexpected. I mean, it was unexpected to me, but it's still different.
Yeah.
So can you share a little bit about how you found out or how it impacted you initially?
Yeah, it's a little bit multifaceted, I guess. So I guess I'll start this with the day that this happened. I had texted him. It was a beautiful day in April. It was like nice and warm in New York. And I was like, hey, we're golfing later. I just sent him a text like, and hey, remember the Liverpool game on 11:30, something like that. And he didn't respond. And I was like, whatever, I don't know. He's probably working. He literally does surgery for 8 hours on his feet. And that morning, I will preface this by saying I am not like a woo-woo person. I've never really leaned into that stuff. But that morning, I was saying to my wife, we were trying to do work at the computer. It was like 9 a.m. And I'm looking at my computer screen and I'm like blurry, like almost nauseous, like, and I turned to her and I was like, hey, I don't know what's happening with me, but like, just keep an eye on me. Cause I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to pass. I don't know what's happening, but I was super, super off and I couldn't shake it. And I almost forgot about this until I started doing these posts. I almost forgot that this happened. And I just think I don't know what to make of that, but I like to throw that in there because it's very, very real. I've never felt anything like that before and not since. It is a very unique feeling, but super off. Like I could not settle myself. I did not know what was going on. I couldn't sit still, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So I had sent my text and his wife texted me and my wife and asked, hey, have you guys heard from Philip? It's, you know, maybe it's 12:05 in the afternoon at this point. And we're like, no, actually. And I texted him earlier. He didn't answer me. I just figured he was working. And she said, no, he was supposed to be at work at 12. And Philip hasn't been late for work one time in his life. He's a very prompt person. He's very professional. And as soon as she said that, the red flags in my body were like out of control. I can't even describe to you. And I don't know why. I had no reason to think anything was wrong. Like you're 5 minutes late to work. You could be just in traffic. You could be in the parking garage at this point. I have no idea. But all of that stuff was very, very real. And we were all very concerned very quickly. And I had an appointment to go to. And I'm like kind of freaking out. I'm like, well, I have to get up. I have to get changed. I have to go to this appointment right now. I really don't want to do that. I don't know where he is. And right before I leave, his wife calls me back and says, hey, I just called your dad, my dad, and because they kind of live close, to go check, to go see like what's going on. Maybe there was a car accident. Maybe he'll see it on the way. Like just go to the house and check. And I was like, listen, am I overreacting by saying maybe you should call the police? Because at this point, you know, it's maybe closer to 12:30. And this is just very, very odd. And she said, actually, you know what? I'm going to hang up with you right now. I'm calling the police to go there too. So at this point, I'm walking out of my house to go to an appointment when I know that my dad and police are going to my brother's house because we don't know where he is or what's happening. I am now on a highway and I get a phone call from my wife trying to tell me that they think Philip is very hurt. He's not responding and they don't know. Basically, it sounds like he is dead. And when you hear those words at all, you know, I'm like, I'm going golfing with him later. What are you even talking about? Well, what are we talking about? No one knows what happened. They're there. And I'm driving. So that was a dangerous combination. I start like internally freaking out at this conversation that feels more surreal than I could ever have imagined. And I could never put into words. So I end up pulling off the road somewhere into some person's driveway. And I get a call from my dad, who's at the house, who is the first person who came across my brother in his garage. And he is like, I can't even understand what he's saying. His voice is already hoarse from the screaming he had been doing, et cetera, et cetera. This is now, you know, sinking in some capacity that like my brother is dead. And that's all I know is that he's at his house. And in my mind, it was an accident because my brother is an avid woodworker. He loves woodworking. He loves being in his garage. This is a house he built only 9 months earlier. And he built it specifically with a big garage and a third bay that could hold all his stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, did some saw malfunction? Like, what are we talking about? Did he have a heart attack? But my dad, you know, made it clear that it wasn't a heart attack because he was in a pool of his own blood. And I'm, as you can imagine, this type of information is not easy to process when you first hear it. It's not believable. You're not on earth. So that becomes difficult. And the reason I said in the beginning that it's multifaceted is because I did not know the nature of what happened, right? So I found out my brother was at his home dead. And then I found out he's in his garage and there's blood everywhere. And I didn't know, I don't think any of us knew what happened until we got to the police station later, where they had my dad kind of like sectioned off. My brother's wife was already there and they were kind of questioning everybody and everything. And basically the only reason I figured out kind of what had happened was because somebody had said something. And again, this is so foggy, about the position of my brother's hands. He wasn't bound at the time, but his hands were behind his back as if they had been, and they were stuck in that position. And I'm like, okay, well, this wasn't an accident then. Oh, like, what are we talking about here? Like, did he get robbed? Who would do that to rob somebody? You know, all these thoughts, and you cannot make sense of the situation. And then obviously more details came out. It becomes clearer. My brother's wife, she shared enough with the police pretty quickly for them to figure out exactly who it was. It was that person. He had already fled and blah, blah, blah. I won't get too much into the that aspect of things. But, you know, it took maybe a day and a half until I knew everything about what happened. And I'm thinking, you know, first I went from heart attack to, okay, accident, to was this some sort of robbery or something, to the most unbelievable thing you could ever be thrust into. So it adds just so many layers to really every single piece of this.
I'm so sorry hearing that. I feel like, you know, it's like you lose somebody and there's that, like, everyone has kind of a similar grief layer. And then it's like everyone's layers are made of different things. And I just can't imagine going, like, I hate saying that. Like,
I never fault anybody for saying that. You know, when people, seriously, I don't, because I, you know, I'm just a guy. I'm a guy in a good area with a good family. This doesn't happen. Like, this doesn't happen where, you know, it doesn't happen. And it's just out of the blue. This person, it was a jealous ex, and he literally came across the country 5 years after the last time my sister-in-law and him were together, and they were only together for a short period of time. And what are you going to do? Some sociopath enters your circle, and
you would not expect that. That's just crazy.
It's crazy. And I was even told this by a friend of our family, is a big time lawyer in the area and taught at the local law school forever. So she knew everybody involved. She knew the judge, she knew all the attorneys and the DA's office. She knew everybody. And she was very helpful to explain everything to me. And she told me this story. She said, you know, after she tried a couple of like really big cases as a prosecutor and then started teaching at the school, they wanted to give her like this basement office, like hidden away, like in the corner. So, you know, there's no windows. She wasn't an easy target, and she refused it. And her reason was, you know, if I've learned anything with, you know, she's probably, you know, in her mid 70s at this point, if I've learned anything over my career, 75 years of doing this, is that if one person wants to get one person, they're going to do it. You cannot stop that. It's as simple as that. You know, because there's a lot to my situation with my brother. There's a lot of what ifs, and there's a lot of camera footage, and you see, you know, my brother had come out of his house quite a ways because this person approached his house at 7 a.m. and caught him off guard, tried to knock on the door, and my brother was probably asleep. So after waiting at the door for a minute, this guy starts to walk away. I'm assuming he was trying to find another way in, but regardless, my brother then does come to the door and comes outside and walks down his sidewalk. So he's outside. And when you see a video like that, you know, in my mind, and I still struggle with this, is why did you go back inside? How did you go back into the house? I know this guy had a gun. I know he probably said something. We couldn't make out what he said on the camera. But in that video, which, I mean, just completely haunts me and lives on YouTube for everyone to see. Yeah, a lot of this stuff is apparently published on YouTube. But, you know, you're like, well, why did you go back inside? And that's not helpful. It's not.
Yeah, the what ifs are really, even with, you know, on different scale of like sickness and just things, you're like, maybe we should have tried this or that. Even though the spiral of, should I have done this? Or if I would have been there, like there's just so many what ifs, and it's really hard to not go there. Cause that like, I feel like tunnel can just go deeper and deeper, and then you can just be stuck in it. And it's really hard to stop yourself and be like, there's nothing that I could have done. The important part is like, they knew that you loved them and you were there for them. Yeah. It's really hard to like, come back around to that piece and just be like, I have to stop thinking about it. And that's even more so if it's like online and you can't even hide from it. That just makes it harder.
Yeah. And that's why I very much, as sick as it is, I appreciate what this woman said to me about if this person had made up his mind, maybe it was in the parking garage at work or walking home from, you know, from the grocery store, or it doesn't matter that the way it happened is the way it happened. Because if one person wants to get one person, I mean, it really is that if you are going to put in that kind of effort, you know, unless you're going to be a recluse and hide. And but also if you don't see it coming, if no one, why would anyone have thought this was going to happen, you know? So yeah, it's all very, it's tough. It's very tough.
Yeah. So as our perspective with grief is through the medical world and looking at our family's health history and kind of going through grief in a sense that our anger and our pain is directed in a different way than, say, your pain would be directed. And so in this case, being that this is such a traumatic nature of your loss, how do you think that has been influencing your grief and your grief journey?
That's a good question. Because if, and this is something that I guess if you're not in it, you wouldn't even think, but it took a year and a half for a trial, and then sentencing was in December of 2023. So, you know, this event happened April 2022, and this person wasn't sentenced until December 2023. So that entire time, and he represented himself, which just threw this wrench in, and no one knew what to take of that and all these other stuff. But during that time, you're getting updates, right? Like my family's being updated. You know, here and not fully. So they're giving you enough to update you, but you don't know the full story. You don't know all the evidence because they don't want you, obviously, to go ruin it. So they have to keep kind of some things under wraps, even from you. And they're not our lawyers. It's the district attorney and prosecutors. So they don't really owe us anything. But as my family is trying to like process this loss and this situation and literally just come to terms with it in reality, you almost don't have time, because a couple weeks go by and you're in this unbelievable grief and disbelief. And then there's an update. You get a call from the DA's office. Hey, we have updates. And you immediately your body goes back into like this shock phase, this like fight or flight, you know, that whole thing. And that happened for a year and a half. And then when the trial comes, I mean, forget it. It's a jury trial, as obvious as it was. And in the end, it did turn out exactly like everyone thought. You know, you're looking at this evidence, you're like, well, this is obvious, and this is a huge waste of time, and this entire process sucks, and all of that. But, you know, it was like delaying your normal grief process for over a year and a half. It wasn't normal, because you had this other layer. You had to think about the what ifs. Could you imagine if there's some evidence processing that got messed up, or chain of command thing, or, you know, whatever, some technicality bullshit thing, and something happens, you know, like that 0.5% chance to live with that on top of trying to just grieve the unbelievably traumatic situation. You asked how it influenced the journey. I don't know how to put that into words, but you can probably imagine.
Yeah, I feel like I was really slow with my grief journey and Kendall as well, but my loss is even farther. So like Kendall's even quicker than me as in the timeline. I was thinking about like that extra layer is like, it's hard. Like I took forever. Like I lost my dad. It's going to be 11 years, 9 years, 6 years since I lost people. And it took me forever to like get to a place where I felt like, oh, I'm actually kind of moving forward with it. Like I was still living life and whatever, but I wasn't like truly living in a sense, you know, because it sticks with you and it affects so many things that having to deal with a trial and like anger of that and just having to go through that, it's like you don't even have time to start really a grief journey. You're just kind of like stuck in the, like you said, like fight or flight, where you're just like going through the motions.
Yeah.
Where that's just like completely different.
Yeah. It's the normal, I guess, a quote, normal grief process of just the loss of a person in a way, like took, you know, a back seat to the situation as a whole. Like, how is this happening? How is this happening? Like, this is me. This is my brother. Like, what are we talking about? Like, we're just people. I'm just a person, right? Like, I'm not a TV show, I don't think. What are we talking about? Like, how could this have happened? So that disbelief. And then on top of it, again, I will not go into like specifics, but like the more we learn. So not only is that like legal process moving forward, but we're learning more as they learn more, as they gather evidence. So you never get a chance to breathe because you learn he had an injury in this way. You know, I really don't want to like it. It's not a true crime podcast, it's not good. It's really, really bad. And that is its own thing. It's its own, completely separate from the loss and the grief and the grieving of a person that I miss like dearly. How could he have gone through that? It's a whole separate thing. The situation itself, how did he go through that? And when you know somebody as intimately as you do your sibling, like you do, right, Rachel? I know my brother. I know him. I know what he was saying. I know what was happening. I just do. And that's hard to grapple with. That is super, super hard because when you start to go down that path, it starts to circle back into disbelief of like, there's no way. There's no way. Like, you can't believe that could have, like, what am I talking about again? And then you go in this loop. So it's a lot. It's definitely a lot.
It also sounds like the whole trial process and things, like, it's just so impersonal because it's like about winning a case
horrible.
And it's about going through all this stuff. And sometimes, like, I wanted to be a lawyer in high school until I realized what goes into it. It's not necessarily like who's right or wrong. It's like who can argue it in the best way and find the loophole and the little amendment or whatever. And I was like, I actually don't like that. Like, that just seems like that seems like against like the point. Like, you're supposed to help who needs it and, you know, don't help the people that don't. And it's really not like that. And just having to deal with like the nitty gritty of like discovery, like all these different things that happen in a case.
Yeah,
but that's your brother. And it's not the news. It's not what you might hear. It's like that is your person that you're seeing. And it's like so impersonal because they're not worried about how the family's going to react or finding out information. It's just like sometimes it's shock value. And like sometimes they just do things like that. And I'm so sorry you went through that.
And that's what we were worried about when we found out late in the game that this individual decided to, After over a year of having like very expensive representation from New York City and all this other stuff, because he had money, he decided to take it on himself. And that meant different things. That meant, you know, he's in there, not in a jumpsuit, not in handcuffs. He's in a suit. He looks like a person. And that we were kind of told from the DA's office that complicates things just slightly for them, only because they have to treat him basically like a lawyer. They have to treat him like with respect. That you can't say certain things. You have to, and you know, you're listening to this as like me, and I'm like, why are we doing any of this? Like, this person should just be dropped off a cliff, and can we all move on? Like, what are we even talking about? It really, really highlights the system and all of its flaws. That not only, I'm not saying that as a biased person, I'm saying that having talked with the DA of my city and his ADAs and all these other people who are in the process who fully agree. Like, everybody agrees. And, you know, I'm not going to remember the nitty gritty and each little example of this, but you're going through this process and I'm sitting in the room with these people and I'm like, so who's going to change that? Whose job is it? If it's not yours, if it's not the job, like, what are we, every person on earth would agree with what I'm saying right now. And we're all just living by these other rules. And some would make that make sense to me. You know, like, that happened countless times in the process. Things that you would never know. You would never know if you're not in this. Like, nobody knows. I should have done a better job writing them down so I could go, like, expose them to the world or something, because everyone would be disgusted to learn, like, the little pieces of a criminal trial like this. It's really, it's very hard to deal with. And so the anger of what happened, the anger of the process, the anger, you know, I'm trying not to direct anger at these people who are trying to do the right thing, but it's a lot. Like I keep saying,
that is a lot. I feel like it just feels so wrong, and I don't know how I would keep my cool. Like, we've had a previous episode where we talked about just, like, what would you do if someone hurts your family member? I'm like, I'm not a violent person, but, like, if something happened, like, I don't know what I'd do. Like, I love my family, and most of them are gone now, but I would have, I don't know. Like, I feel like that's what would have made me go crazy is, like, even my sister was my older sister. She was, like, the sweet one. I always say, like, I protected her because she was, like, the sweeter sister. So I always felt protective of her. I would go off on, like, people when I was, like, a six-year-old, you know, and people would make fun of her because she was
100%.
That's, like, I don't know, as an adult, if something like that happened, it's, like, I don't know. Like, that's just a crazy feeling because you want to support them in any way you can. And sometimes it's just, like, their legacy and their memory and justice.
Yeah.
And
I love that word. I love that word when it comes to this particular situation. I can't tell you how many times I've heard, you know, well, at least you got justice. At least justice was served. At least, and you're like, but you're not here in anymore. My shoes. Yeah, you don't, like, if you think that just removing this guy and putting him in a room somewhere else is justice, like, I really hope this doesn't happen to you. That's all I have to say, because you're going to be rude awakening if you think that this is justice.
It doesn't feel like nearly enough. That kind of goes into our next thing we wanted to talk about was, did you experience any, like, unexpected reactions or responses to this? Because I think it happens with grievers in general. Just people put their foot in their mouth over any situation. And I think with a traumatic loss, it'd probably be 10 times worse with what 10 times worse with what people could possibly say, because there's so many things. Did you have a hard time with that? Like, people reaching out or just saying outlandish things to you?
I think for the most part, people were pretty good, or at least I should say, everybody was well-meaning. And we all, I'm sure, have gotten that where, you know, the person is well-meaning. They say something that you're like, was that okay? But you just let it go because you know their heart's in the right place. But the one that I always tell, I got a DM on Instagram within the first 2 weeks. Like, I don't even know if we had the services yet, from somebody who was a loose acquaintance from, you know, I don't know, I think a gym world I'm in or something. And we've chatted before or whatever, but, and people did this a lot. They would reach out and they just want to share their story. They'd want to share, you know, I lost my sister when I was 7 and she committed suicide when I was 15, that kind of thing. And I'm like, okay, you know, I'm still, like, in la la land over here, but thank you for sharing. But my favorite one that I can now laugh at was somebody reaching out to say that they know exactly what I'm going through. They know how I'm feeling, because they had lost their, like, beloved cat very recently, and they were really, really struggling. And I don't, you know, the comparison thing, don't love it.
It
don't
gets
love
it you for every anybody, time. Yeah.
But I'm sorry. What did you just say to me? But now I can laugh at that. I don't hold any grudges or anything, but yeah.
I think we just need to eradicate that whole thing where I think it's always someone, like, trying to relate or say that they get it. And maybe to them that is what they feel. but it just never lands well. Like, because whatever I feel to my person, whoever you say you've lost, for the most part, it's not going to feel the same. And I don't think people say it ever in the right context either. It's like, I could say, like, you lost your brother. Like, I lost my sister. I relate to just losing a sibling. That's like a very, like, safe thing. And then just to go on, like, well, obviously, I know what it feels like to do. It's like, no, I don't want to go into, like, your situation. I can speak on my situation. I think people just need to remove that from their vocabulary of just, like, comparing as feeling like that's the way to help somebody is by doing that. Because I've never heard anyone say that they liked hearing that. Like, I've never heard anyone say, like, yeah, that was really helpful or anything. But you brought up another good point of people reaching out to you, basically trauma dumping. And I think that's another route where people go is that they're trying to help you, but they're like putting on this whole other thing that happened. You're like, I'm very raw and healing right now. Yeah. You're trying to dump your situation on me. Like, that's also not helpful. I think people just try to like, oh, I relate to you. And that's, it's a trying to relate when there's not a relation or just like a need to that I feel like ends up in a very bad place. Like saying that, it's like, you don't want to hear about something really dark when you're probably already in a dark place with your own situation.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just not, it's not helpful. It's, and again, it's their heart's in the right place, right? Like, you know what they're trying to do, you know, but the problem is like everybody, and you'd think they'd know better being in it. But like, if, you know, if you truly know how I feel, then you know that someone coming to you, even with a story that like loosely relates to try and fix how you're feeling, that's essentially what you're trying to do, right? Like you're trying to go, hey, just look at me for a second. I know you're not alone. You're like, I thank you, I guess. That sucks that you went through that. But like, I'm a little bit right now over here about me at this very moment. But, you know, but it, for some reason, I don't know, some people, either the loss that they're trying to relate to you with isn't quite as big as they think. Like, they really haven't had one of these big, big ones, or they're just, I don't know, they're missing the signs.
I think that's the bigger point that me and Kendall have talked about before is people look at grief as like something they need to fix for somebody. And unless you experience it, you know, like, it's not fixable. Like, there's no solution for it. Nothing's gonna, the only thing that would fix it is if my sister was here with me, my parents were still here. Like, if your brother was here, like, nothing would fix it unless the impossible thing happened.
Yes.
So people always look at it as like, you do this thing, or that's what they say, like, they would want you to be happy, or they'd want you to do this. Yeah. It's like people are coming at it as like, I need to fix it for you and help you by saying something or telling you, encourage you in a certain way is going to fix it. And there's no fixing it. And I think that's the bigger thing that needs to be talked about is like, you can't fix the situation. I wish it could be fixed, but it can't.
Right. Right.
So stop saying the things that you think are going to fix it, because in reality,
and
they're not.
Honestly, I feel like it's okay to just be like, if one of my friends came to me early on at the services, first time I saw them since this happened, and just looked at me and was like, this fucking sucks. That's it. I would have absolutely, I've been like, yep, you're right. And I wouldn't have resented that. I wouldn't have had that, like, that little tinge of like, yeah, you missed the mark, you know, but thank you for trying. Like, no, you're right. This hurts. And it's okay to acknowledge that this is terrible and it sucks. And that's okay.
I think what's interesting about your story in particular is that when I look at my own grief with my own dad, I experienced a new sense of anger that I had never experienced before. But I had nowhere to funnel it or channel it. I was more like, it was more of an existential sense of like, why would my dad die? Like, how could this happen to him? Like, he's so young type of thing. Whereas I, as an external person looking into and hearing your story, you do have someone to be angry with. You, like, I imagine my anger, and like, you have this deeper anger underneath. And do you find that like that could change your perspective on your life entirely? Or are there other things involved in all of this that has changed your perspective on life and relationships and things?
Yeah, it's that's something I, you know, I'm not that far into it, into this whole thing still, right? You know, April is 3 years. I'm hoping that changes. I don't think I see it changing a ton given the nature, right? Like, you know, you hear people who lose somebody to a drunk driver and then years later, kind of for their own healing, forgive that person. They understand you're a person, you made a mistake, and they can forgive them. That anger, I guarantee, is there at first.
Yeah.
This does not have that. So that's a struggle. And I can feel that pretty often. And I think the way I've noticed it in my life is, and I have to work on it all the time, is my patience. It's affected my patience with little, like just insignificant things or small talk, or if someone's complaining about nothing, you know, just like that kind of thing. I can feel myself get, and I know that that's where it's coming from, but yeah, I don't, I also try and I try to give myself a little bit of grace with that, because like, what else am I supposed to feel about that? You know, I try not to fight it. Like, you're too angry about this. You don't need to be angry. No. I think it's okay that that's in there. As long as I'm aware of it and I am like managing it. But this is my brother. I mean, you know, and it's kind of interesting to see the differences between how the males in my life and the females in my life that are very close to this situation, the differences in like what they focused on even to this day, where their energy and thoughts are. And I mean, at some point you have to remember, like, we are animals, and you know, there is a primal nature to this type of situation where it's like, my initial thing is, you know, round the troops and like, what are we doing here? Like, that's where I go. And the girls do not in any way. They're obviously unbelievably angry and sad and all that, but it is interesting to watch that play out.
Our episode with Brendan ended up being a two-parter.
So stay tuned for the final part next week.